Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 521.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and continuing the theme of therapy with more than one person that we discussed last week when we talked about bringing the family into child therapy, this week I'm talking with my friend and colleague, Akilah Riley Richardson. You may remember my interview with Akilah from a few years ago, which you can listen to now by going back into our archives. But this week, we're talking about Akilah's new book, Marginalized Couples in Therapy. And as you'll hear when you're listening to my conversation with Akilah, we're not only talking about couples, but other types of relationship groups as well. And this is not a conversation about only heteronormative relationships. In fact, it is pretty common in our field for most of us to have learned about relationship therapy through the lens of a Eurocentric heteronormative model. And although I am an individual therapist, I see while working with my individual clients that many of them are in relationships that would fall into the exact dynamics that Akilah is speaking about. But most of us don't learn anything about working with clients who are living with marginalized identities and the special considerations of that work. This is a type of work that Akilah is experienced in and highly passionate about. And I just want to put in a little plug for her course with the Academy of Therapy Wisdom. I took that course when it came out a few years ago, and even though I'm not a couples therapist, it was super informative and helpful for me in understanding the relationships of my clients who are LGBTQ+, or those who may have maybe part of throuples or polycules, and as well as the power dynamics in those relationships, especially when one partner carries more of a marginalized identity than the other or others. So this is a really important conversation. I'm so grateful to Akilah for being willing to come and share a little sliver of her knowledge with us here on Therapy Chat today. And if you're a therapist or someone who's considering relationship therapy that would fall outside of the Eurocentric heteronormative view, I think that you will find this to be a very interesting conversation. So let's dive right into my conversation with Akilah Riley Richardson. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be back together with Akilah Riley Richardson. Akilah, thank you so much for being my guest again on Therapy Chat today.
I'm glad to be here. Good to be here with you.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you back on my virtual screen right now. And I think we know each other so much better than we did when we did our first interview a few years ago, which feels really nice. And you have a new baby.
That is my baby. It's so cool to see it in somebody's hand.
Isn't it beautiful? I love this. I love the cover. It's so beautiful. Yes, Marginalized Couples in Therapy. So I'm so excited to talk to you about this book and what you're doing now. And before we get into it, though, let's just start off by you telling our audience a little bit more about who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Akilah Riley Richardson. I am a trauma and couples therapist. I live in Trinidad and Tobago, but I service persons from different parts of the world. You know, I've been fortunate to be in different parts of the world, teaching South Africa, in the US, at different times, different parts in the Caribbean as well. So that's in a nutshell, who I am. And a big part of my passion is looking at the experiences of marginalized people, marginalized individuals and couples. And I think in these times, especially, you know, I think it's really important to pause and to consider their realities.
Yeah. It's in these times, especially when any marginalized aspect of identity is being treated in a violent way in this Western culture. And I want to ask you to name, like, when you say marginalized identities and specifically what we're talking about for your book, which identities are you referring to?
So in my work, I focus largely on the experiences of LGBTQI and BIPOC persons. But of course, you know, the marginalized experience is not just for those two communities. Yeah. People are marginalized based on level of ability. Yeah, people are marginalized for so many different reasons. But for the sake of my work, I focus largely on those particular groups. And marginalized people are people who typically experience any form of systemic trauma. Yeah, from the various systems, from the educational system, the judicial system, religious systems. Systems, once the system is quote unquote the culprit, yeah, we understand it as systemic trauma.
Yes. So you have been doing this work and talking about it for a while, and you have a course through Academy of Therapy Wisdom, which trains therapists in your method, the PRIDE model. I want to really give you a chance to kind of like toot your own horn here, because you're very humble as a human being, but I think it's important for people to hear you're doing some like big, important work, and it's not everyday stuff in the therapy world. So when I took your course, and I am as not a couples therapist, I'm an individual therapist, I learned so much about the dynamics of couples where there are power imbalances and different cultural backgrounds and how impactful that is. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about, let's just talk about your PRIDE model.
Yeah, I think the PRIDE model is part of my response to a few things, one of which being, like, there are these two concepts, stress spillover and stress crossover. And stress spillover is when the system is seeping into the relationship. And then stress crossover would be when one partner's stress, probably from the system, is crossing over to the other. And, you know, when I was trained as a couples therapist, you know, I had longed for more conversation to happen about the impact of the wider system. Because as a couples therapist, sometimes we as couples therapists focus so much on people's family of origin or the interpersonal dynamics between them, not giving up consideration or just consideration to the wider systems that people occupy. And so the pride model was, or is, I should say, a space to pause. So pride stands for pivot, rumble, imagine, develop, and evolve. The pride model prioritizes looking at the system and inviting clients to first pivot and rumble through a process of relational curiosity. That's the first one of the first steps, right? And I say step loosely because in my experience in practicing the pride model, I have found that, you know, you really, it is not a sequential or linear as one may imagine, right? So the book, the book does admit to that as well. But relational curiosity is finding ways of entering the system, the couple system, sorry, with an invitation. And the invitation is, do you know that there's probably more happening here? Let's come see. Yeah. And, you know, I use different strategies. We look at the habits of survival, the ways you've had to survive outside of the system, outside in the system, the wider system, that you've had to now use those, you know, use those ways even in your relationship. We look at what's called the theater of oppression. We look at the relational terrain. So the relational terrain refers to that felt sense of what relationships mean. Yeah. So as we're navigating the world on a day-to-day basis, as we're navigating our judicial system and educational system and health systems, all of these experiences are shaping how we understand relationship. And those understandings don't just shift and disappear because you're new with your intimate partner. Some of those filter in even there. So it's really about how is the terrain outside shaping the terrain within the relationship. And so I see relational curiosity as, and I mentioned this in the book, as a form of yawning. Yeah. And yawning is a term I learned from Tyson Yanka Porter, where he talks about it's an Aboriginal indigenous method of being with people in an egalitarian space, supporting couples in looking at their dynamics, but also generating knowledge and co-creating understanding with you as the clinician about what's happening in their relationship. The clinician isn't an expert in the yarn who is here to diagnose you with labels. The clinician is a co-creator, probably even on a lower stance. It's having a lower standing, sorry, in the context, because the clinician has to understand and learn your way of being. So for me, inviting people into that process of curiosity is one of the first things that become so important for me in the work.
Yeah. So I hear you saying that the couple is the expert on themselves, and they're sharing their understanding of what their relationship dynamics are. The clinician is in the position sort of sitting at their feet and listening, learning from them. Yeah.
And that's, in fact, how I developed this model. I was sitting at the feet of my clients and learning. Yeah. I didn't have something preset that I created. I was learning moment by moment. I remember after some sessions saying, oh, this is a technique I want to try based on what I learned here. Or, this is a new understanding. But yeah, and you know, I call that, so in the pride model, I also talk about something called the biome. Yeah, B-I-O-M-E. And the biome is the therapeutic presence, because the self of the clinician is so important while working. And one of the things I say in the biome is that the last letter in the word biome, E, stands for epistemic embracing. And I drafted or created or coined that based on a term I learned called epistemological hybridism. And it's really about, it's a mouthful. What is epistemic embracing is really about fully embracing other people's ways of knowing the world and integrating that in how you work with them. So for me, the pride model as it stands now isn't even finished. Yeah, like the book represents where it is at this point in time. But I know that as I go along and I learn more from marginalized couples, that, you know, it will shift and change even more, you know, and it has started even, and I'll share more about that later on. But a big piece was really staying with how my couples come to know the world and staying with their understandings of intimacy. You know, when I was trained, I was taught that there was a, that people give you preset definitions of intimacy. Intimacy means. And I realized that for various cultural groups and for people who have various experiences in the world, who have different social locations, intimacy cannot kind of a universal definition.
Yeah,
I think in the definition of intimacy shifts and changes over time and across groups. And I have found in my work that I have to pause and align with how the couple understands intimacy. Yeah, in my work. And not assume that I know what healthy intimacy is supposed to look like. You know, any definition or understanding of intimacy must take a bow to culture and must be reflective of systemic dynamics around the couple.
The way you're speaking about this, it feels like somehow there's a decentering of the mental health professional, you know, role in a needed way.
Yeah. It and you know, I'm feeling into something. As you said that, it's something within me is emerging. For me, the decentering is a critical part. Like when I first taught this, I did spend time, well, maybe the second time, I did spend time, second time, teaching more about the self of the therapist. And as you just said that, I realized I have to emphasize that even more. The decentering of the clinician. Because there's a way we center ourselves in therapy.
Yeah.
We center our model. We center our approach. And that is not something that I have ever wanted to do in my work with marginalized people, center and approach, you know? And I think that it that becomes very, 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 very important, especially when I'm doing the yarn. Yeah. And but it takes a lot out of you. You have to, there's a lot of grief that you have to experience as a clinician to allow that to happen, you know? And it's so interesting that we're talking about grief because when I work with couples who are experiencing systemic trauma, that's one of the things I welcome them into. So there's this thing I do called responsible externalizing, where we walk into a process of externalizing the harm, naming the harm of the system, contacting it. And then we also have to grieve because systemic trauma is not going to go away. It's very different from other kinds of trauma. It is not, it's chronic, it's persistent, it's showing up all the time. Like I work with a couple on Monday, one Monday, and then 2 Mondays later, the thing I thought we worked on is back because, you know, person's experienced a very egregious act of homophobia or transphobia or racism or so. And so there are two things we have to grieve, I think, when that happens. One, we have to grieve the fact that, you know, it will never be over. That the thing we're working through will keep coming and keep coming and impacting the relationship. And we have to grieve this understanding of therapy. Yeah. The understanding of therapy and the primacy of the clinician who is going to solve it all and fix it all. Those are different things we have to grieve. You have to grieve what you thought the therapeutic space would be and who you thought I was. Yeah. In the face of a bigger battle, and I'm using the word battle, I know it's not correct according to English standards, but this bigger battle beast, yeah, that is outside, that is not adhere to your model's tenets, yeah, and that's hard to be with. I think it's hard to be with that kind of grief. So I really think, you know, it one of the things I mention in the work is about clinician being intimate. Yeah. And I lean heavily on the work of Ken Hardy when I talk about that, because Ken talks about relational risk taking. And I have had to learn to say, yes, it's hard. You know, you're not making it up. And I've had to, and of course, this is never performative. It's always just me accessing the parts of myself that are genuinely feeling it. But, you know, whatever anger I feel or sadness I feel, I let it out. You know, if there are tears to be shed and I feel it authentically, I share it. I shed it. Because I think the clinician in carving the therapeutic presence, the clinician also needs to make the invisible visible. Yeah. There's a way in which systemic trauma, especially the impact on couples, systemic trauma is often so invisibilized and disenfranchised. Yeah. Especially now. Like I was saying to a client of mine who came to clinic therapy last week and was having a hard time. And I said to her, I don't even want to be part of a process that's trying to make you feel better. Like that feels like if I'm trying to make you feel better to deal with racism and all sorts of isms, it feels like I'm a machine, a part of the system. Yeah. But I need to make you feel better to cope with it so that it never changes. Because if I make you feel better about it, yeah, nothing shifts, nothing changes. There's an anger that needs to happen. There's an anger that you need to feel. It's the anger and frustration, you know, that keeps us resisting and doing what we need to do. And so I've learned to not see my inability and perhaps even my unwillingness to make people feel better about racism as a feeling, you know. I've learned to see that as a critical part of the work, a critical part of liberatory practice. Yeah. And I've learned to abandon notions of therapy that quite frankly just are a disservice, yeah, to people at times.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
When you said that about making people feel better about racism, it's like, who does that serve?
Who does that serve? It does. Yeah. It does. It serves the system. And I think we have to...
So that you can keep functioning in the system. Yeah.
You should not be able to function. Like, I think we need to... functioning in chaos, this does not mean... And I think when I mentioned the biome before, and it's B-I-O-M-E, B is for bravery. And the bravery part is about us naming it. Naming, being brave enough to name it and act critical consciousness in the room. Name that you are right now arguing with your wife or pulling away from your partner or feeling an intense sense of rejection in your partnership. And there's something else happening here, and it's my responsibility to name it. And all of the quote-unquote pathological behavior that's showing itself up here is really tied to something else, and this behavior is supposed to happen. I mean, I'm not saying it's good or it's nice or it's right, but it is exactly what is supposed to happen. And so I want to say that if for those who may wish to journey with this model, I think that's a huge part, the bravery. Yeah. Because if you're not brave, you can harm. You know, I want to say you can harm and two, you have to. I was looking at I know I made some disjointed sentences. I was looking at a sharing recently from Robert Schwartz, and he was saying we have to abandon the need to be helpful. And it's a riveting statement, but I love it. Yeah. Because I think sometimes in our preoccupation sometimes or fixation on being helpful. Yeah. We begin to help the systems that harm people instead of helping persons themselves. you know? And yeah. I am learning what Robert said really just stuck with me. And I'm learning to sit and grieve helpfulness.
Yeah.
I'm saying to people now, I'm just going to be with you. This is all I can offer. And I'm grieving all the thoughts about who you can be as a couple. And, you know, we just have to. Yeah. But it's not easy though. As I talk about it now, it might sound very enticing, etc. But I have to say it is not easy. There's so many fears that I have when I adopt this stance, you know, especially as a practitioner from the Global South. And the, you know, Jamie Marriage, who I love, you know, talks so much about the complex and our preoccupation with certification and this and that and the next. And it often feels as if we can't sell wellness, you know, then we can't do this work. And I want to be more with presence and authenticity than just trying to sell wellness. Make you feel better in this, you know. And you know what I also want to support people in? And I was sitting with someone recently. Her name is Dr. Danielle Brown, and she's talking about refusal politics. And now that's a part. So I tell you, the work is transforming even before my eyes, because I was like, oh my God, this is so wonderful. I want to start building this in. For me, the Pride model is now part of refusal politics. Yeah. I refuse to make people feel better about harmful systems. Yeah. And I am also at the same time going to support couples in building liberatory connections for themselves that live amidst, yeah, the harm here. So it's the refusal is about, I refuse to make them feel better. And at the same time, I refuse to let them capitulate and cave in. Yeah. So I will stand with them. And if you look at my work, the last quote unquote phase, I talk about building liberatory connections. For me, liberatory connections are like the pinnacle of refusal politics. Yeah, it is me saying that we have to take back your relationship, even while we grapple with it. Yeah, and we take it back through processes that I call identity and relational cherishing, identity and relational resilience, relational declarations, all these different things. We have to take back your relationship, not in spite of, but in the midst of systemic harm. So even those declarations, even those strategies that I use, they take the wider context. We can't pretend the context does not exist, but how do we develop something in the midst of this chaos? The chaos is with us. The chaos is part of our story. And I wish it were not. I wish we lived in some sort of utopian kind of, but indeed we're in dystopian times, you know, it. And
here we are.
Yeah, is that like amazing? I get up some days and I just sit and I'm like, wow, this is the world. You know, and I watch copious amounts of Bridgerton to escape. And shout out to Shonda. But then I have to return to it, you know. And as I said, I feel the grief. And I do not punish myself for sadness and a lack of joy. Mm-mm. I do not punish
myself. You're alive.
It means you're alive. I do not punish myself for anxiety, for being in the darkness. I do not punish myself, especially now.
And the liberatory connections feels like the counter to that isolation of, am I the only one who's can't ignore how this feels, you know, the liberatory connections, finding empowerment within ourselves, within relationships with others.
Yeah.
Painful.
And that's why I love the couple system and couples therapy work for this particular kind of work in particular. Because right here is your greatest ally, this person next to you. There's a couple or throuple or whatever unit, whatever beautiful unit you want to establish. Yeah. You have persons with you who are experiencing the harm of the world as well. And you can either, the couple system can either be a place of the pain as the stress spills over and crosses over, or this can be your most prolific ally. The two of you can grieve together. And the two of you can refuse together. Yeah. We just have to get couples talking about it. You know, I think it's time for us to slow down in therapy and get couples talking about it. But we have to be the ones to first name it. We can't be afraid to name it. And as I think, when we name, and I talk about this in the book as well, I talk about this thing called the glitch, you know, GLITCH. As you can see, I'm very fond of acronyms. Grief, liminality. And I being the first two. And I want to be with grief and liminality for a bit. You know, I think that when we bring people into that process, you know, we have to be okay with being with them in the liminal space, you know, of not knowing where this will go, you know, or preoccupation with finality has to disappear, you know, because you never know, like I've created this quote unquote model, but I can't assure you, and I've said this, I cannot assure anybody that this is going to make everything wonderful with a couple. And I think it's dishonest to do that, wouldn't it be? You know, that kind of thinking would not acknowledge the uniqueness of this type of trauma, one, but also the uniqueness of each human spirit, you know, and how they navigate the world. So I think being in the liminal space with people as they navigate this is so important. Yeah.
Yeah. And can I just name that I feel there's so much desire for certainty in the way our field is structured.
Oh, yeah.
And that's such a colonized way of approaching things, as if there's this instruction manual. And if you just follow it, then things will be great for you. And if things aren't great for you, then you must not have been following the instruction manual properly. I mean, I feel like that's such a fantasy that we love in our field to like hook into and go, this is the one, this is the way, you know, if I just do this, then everything will be exactly how I want it to be. And I'll be able to make everybody feel great. And then I'll be feel good about myself. And, you know, it's like, it feels a lot more messy to be in the liminal space, but it's real. It's real. It's clients aren't looking for us to wave, even if they think they want this, they aren't really looking for us to wave a magic wand and make their life magically perfect. So let's all like let that idea just get rid of that.
Yeah. And even if they are, I think we can name that from very early on, you know?
Yeah.
And that might feel hard to say, but I think we need to do it from very early on. I think, you know what that does as well? I think it helps them to be gentler with themselves as well. Like I have clients sometimes who beat up themselves when they're not doing better. Like couples, like, you know, and I have to say it to you. I mean, first of all, this is hard. This is hard. It makes sense to me that this is not shifting or changing. And I've had to say to some couples, I will work with you for years and years and years if you want me to. I think as a person who's experienced so much pain in my own life, I think just being with is like I have people who come to me and I have to admit sometimes I'm like, wow, I wonder why they're still coming, you know? And I realize over time, a lot of people, you know, they value presence. Yeah. They value presence. They value having somebody be with them in the mess of it. Yeah. And I think, you know, when I look at care for persons that did not necessarily fall in this complex and needing to be certified in a million ways to do things. And I'm not knocking certification. I'm not knocking any of these things. I'm just saying that there are care systems that sit outside of this that are just as valid. Yeah. So the systems that require certification and training are valid. And I like them and they're strong. And they're also as valid as systems that do not require that. Yeah, what I love about the work of Jamie Marriage, as I mentioned, is that Jamie has always been very bold about respect for those other systems and other ways of treating and other ways of being and caring that exist outside of certification. You know, we need to see them as equally as worthy, you know. And I mean, I don't know where my work will head. I don't know if it'll head in that direction, but I know for sure that I always want to have healthy respect for other ways of caring.
Right. I often say we need to redefine what we think evidence-based is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
10,000, hundreds of thousands of years of evidence, or this narrow scientific framework that was identified as the way that you can find truth.
Yes.
As if there can be one truth, you know?
True.
I'm all for science. I'm not anti-science. Both and.
We want both. We want the respect for certification, and we want the respect for indigenous caring systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we want the indigenous caring systems where necessary and where they need to be heralded. We want them to be given the respect that they deserve in the field.
And I guess it's also important to say for those who are listening and might not have thought about this, that people whose knowing is more aligned with indigenous ways of caring may not value these certifications that you think are the best thing since sliced bread. So, you know, maybe step aside of your ego.
And find other ways. Yep. I totally agree with you.
Open.
Totally agree with
you. So, Akila, as we come to the end of our time, I want to ask you if you could reach the ear of the thinkers and leaders that you would love to learn and sit at the feet of, if they were to hear this, who would be some of the people that you would love to be able to have a deep conversation with or you know, propose an idea to, that in your fantasy world? You already speak of Kenneth Hardy, who I know is such a great
leader. I would love to be in conversation with Kenneth Hardy. I draw on Ken's work, not because we've met, but because I was just, I sat in a workshop with him and I went following his work and I bought his book and I was like, wow, this is an amazing human. So I think that would be the person I'd really want to just be in conversation with, especially since I pull on so much of his thinking in some parts of my work. It would be him. I've been fortunate to have wonderful conversations with men such as Erasmo Menakem, who wrote the foreword for my book, and Bayo Kumulafi, etc.
Yes.
I gotta be sitting with Ken. That's my dream.
Only him, no one else?
Ken is the one that's coming to my mind right now. Okay. I have to be honest. It's Ken. Yeah, I only have one right now.
Okay. No pressure. I just wanted to throw that out there because you never know who might be listening, who might say, hey, I know Dr. Kenneth Hardy, and he would love to hear more about what you're doing. You never know.
Yeah, the girl from the Caribbean who wants to meet him. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are in Trinidad and Tobago, and, you know, it might feel like you're a little person in a little place, but your work is super impactful. And I'm very grateful to have a small piece in helping it reach, you know, a different audience who might not have been aware of what you do. Because the field, especially when I was saying this before we started recording, when we think about couples work, it's such a, you know, a sliver of the overall therapy world. And thinking about non-white cultural identities might not be on everyone's radar when they're thinking about relationship work. But of course, everyone's having relationships of all genders, all cultural backgrounds, and the whiteness perspective on couples work is a westernized Eurocentric approach that is not speaking to everyone. So I don't know who else out there is doing what you're doing. I don't think, is there anyone?
I don't know. I don't want to say yes. I don't want to say I'll say I don't know. And even if there is, I mean, the more the merrier, right? As I said,
well,
to
yeah.
People,
and if they are, maybe they can. We can have a conversation. Too, and all of you can expand your.
Yeah.
Your
I'm not like I've said in many spaces. I'm not interested in becoming a guru. I'm not interested in that at all. It's about the work. And if there are others who are having similar ways and thoughts, let's converse. Let's build each other's work. Because at the end of the day, we're doing this for people. We're doing this.
Exactly.
The work must live on. I'm in middle age, I guess you'd call this now. And the work is the work must live on beyond me. Yeah. So why not have other people take it, add to it? Tear it apart, whatever. You know, it's gonna hurt, but that's okay. The tearing apart part, you know. But it's whatever tensions that happen are necessary to happen for the work to grow. Yeah. So
Well, that's a beautiful perspective too. Not clinging too tightly to
you can't
what you've created.
You can't, because when I thought about this, I was at a particular stage of my journey and I knew certain things then. And so if the work is criticized because somebody else discovered something else, yes, it will hurt. I can't pretend. And there might be a part of me wanting to resist, but then there's also a part of me that has to listen, because the work is really about the people. Yeah. So if there's something that's being critiqued and is going to benefit people, then this has to happen.
Yeah. It's a growth process. It's an evolution
of
process.
One, but yes.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not going to be easy. I won't be sailing on. Oh, this is so great. No,
well, what you're doing is amazing. And so you have this week, and I'll post about this on social media, but this episode is going to come out next week. So this week you have a book launch party through Therapy Wisdom. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
I want to say that this is priced at a very reasonable price. The Academy of Therapy Wisdom has created this wonderful opportunity for me to have a book launch. And I feel I'm humbled by it, quite frankly. And I would love for people to come and support the efforts behind this. Yeah. Support the efforts behind this, support the work. You know, when you support the work, and I'm just being honest, when you support the work, you support sustenance of the work, you know, and the ability to imagine and create more. So, yeah.
So if they come to your book launch, it's a very reasonable price. I know they get a book and it's like a
2 hours
hour.
Of teaching. Yeah. 2 hours of teaching. Yeah. And it's going to be recorded. Yeah. So, interestingly enough, just this morning, I was sitting doing some extra work on it, pulling in some of the new things that have been coming up for me. Yeah. So yeah, they can, and engagement, and they can ask questions, etc. So I'm really looking forward. Yeah. And just being part, in my opinion, of a liberation experience, a liberatory experience, because, you know, I think in these times, anything, like, it's almost like we're afraid to gather to talk about marginalization. And here's the Academy of Therapy Wisdom carving a space with intention, with intentionality to talk about marginalized people. And we need to come together. We need to come together.
That liberatory connection that you mentioned, right?
Yes. In that moment,
it can take many shapes.
It can take many shapes. It's taking that shape this week.
Okay. So, Akilah, will you please tell our listeners where they can find updates on everything you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
All the classes and trainings and courses books and all the amazing things you'll be doing.
Yeah. So you can subscribe to my website, AkilahRileyRichardson.com. Laura can attest that I don't email a lot. it's pretty reasonable, right?
Yes. No spamming at all. It's very limited.
And there are times when I definitely hold space by offering a lot of free workshops, etc., free gatherings. So you can definitely check out my website. You can also find me at info@AkilahRileyRichardson.com. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, I believe, and LinkedIn. So you can look for me there. as well. If you can't find me, go email Laura and ask Laura where to find me.
Yes. And I'll put your email and your link to your website here. And I'm so grateful that you came back to Therapy Chat. And I'm so grateful for that your book is out in the world, and that I can't wait to see what else will happen. I'm not, you know, adding things onto your plate, but I think that you are in such a small place, you might not realize how big the impact of your work is and can be.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Thank you for having me.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.